Well, God bless you guys. Good morning. I barely made it in. Our baptism people are still getting out of their wet clothes, and I promise if I have any wet spots on me, I didn't have an accident. I was just baptizing people. How exciting, man. I think it was actually 18 or 19 maybe that got baptized. Isn't that amazing? And I love, maybe you're at a place in your life where you think, oh, I should have done this a long time ago. It's too late to do it. It is never too late to be obedient to God. And it is a public declaration of your faith, and it's always the right thing to do to declare your faith in front of people. Hey, so we have an exciting service today. One, I said we're going to get to some giveaways at the end, and it's a big day for everybody. And I know some of you are Niners fans, and we're hoping by the end, the Lord's going to do a work in your heart and help you see the light. We want you to make it to heaven. We don't want you perishing in Anyway, I had the chance to sit down recently with someone here in the church whose story I thought was worth you getting to be a part of. And the reason is because I think that some of you are either in the middle of something like this, have been through something like this, or I can almost promise you will go through something like this. Won't share all the details, won't be the exact same scenario, but will be something meaningful enough that you're going to go, I'm so glad I was a part of that conversation. And I got to be sort of not only a spectator, but a participant in this family story. And I want you to get to hear a little of it before I go into just sharing with you for a few brief minutes. Would you guys give a big warm welcome to Franklin Carvajal? Franklin, come on up. I'm going to let you have my seat right over there, and I'm going to sit right here. I'm going to hand that to you. Franklin and his wife, Kristen, and their daughter started coming to the church how long ago?
A little bit over a year ago, I think.
Okay, a little bit over a year ago. And tell everybody what your line of work is. What is it that you do?
I'm a software engineer.
Okay, software engineer. And when you came here, you were working for a company, and everything was going awesome. And about, what was it, in November, my friend Johnny Wilson, who comes about every November, he did a great, really, really, really good message on obedience to God, and it was really built around tithing, right? And God really started working on your heart. I mean, it wasn't a foreign concept to you guys, right? So first of all, do this. Tell us kind of how long have you been a follower of Christ?
So I've been following Christ for 8 years, 9 years now.
Okay. But there was a time, too, when you weren't a follower of Christ, and you kind of went through not only a crisis of faith, you sort of walked away altogether. Is that right?
Yeah. So I grew up a Christian, a Seventh-day Adventist Christian. And I think around 17 is when I became an atheist.
Okay.
So for probably 2 years, I was hardcore atheist.
Right.
Christopher Hitchens, God's not good, pretty much in complete defiance against Christianity.
Right. Yeah. And then, so you sort of went on that journey and not only lost faith, but just completely stopped believing. You sort of made that journey back, and over the last several years, your faith continued to grow. And so the idea of tithing and obedience in that area wasn't a foreign concept, but it was one in which you said, kind of share your attitude towards money altogether in the last several years and sort of where God fit into all that.
Yeah, so for me, it's funny because thinking about it. So for me, God was money. I was professing Christ, but for me, money was the end and the goal. So providing family, I'd justify it in a bunch of different ways, but ultimately, the reason that I was living was for money.
Okay.
So I was struggling with tithe in general just because of the fact that I was struggling with money to provide for my family. So I constantly justified money to everything that I was doing. So late night working, whatever it was, money was the goal.
Yeah. And then at the end, sort of, I think the way you explained it to me was you'd give to God as long as there was extra left over
Yeah.
So after all the bills were paid and you guys had done everything you wanted to do, if there was still something left, then sort of God would get
it was,
that. Right?
It was always kind of, not necessarily, there wasn't a desire to always give,
right.
But it was always, well, we gotta, I have to feed my family. It was all these reasons that were good reasons into which I would, we would then kind of see at the end of everything being paid,
right.
What are we gonna give to God now out of this?
So that all sort of changed a little bit in your perspective, your attitude. Sort of changed a few months back in November when Johnny was here and shared really, really powerful message about giving and tithing. And you really felt like the Lord had impressed on you and Kristen that you should go for it and just really be obedient, right?
Yeah, that was a crazy experience because I've heard tons of tithe messages. And when it comes to tithe, it's always been about the money for me.
Right.
Right. So... when he came and he preached, the conviction of the Holy Spirit was, it's not so much the money that you're giving, but your first fruit. Mm. That you're actually ultimately trusting me with more than just the money. You're trusting me and putting faith in me to deliver you and provide for you
right.
before anything else.
So you guys made that decision on Sunday. Your payday was coming up Wednesday, correct?
Yeah, so I got paid Wednesday.
Yeah, so you guys had already decided in your heart you were going to do it the first thing the check happened, and you did it, right?
Yeah, so ultimately Wednesday, I had talked with Kristen a little bit about it, and then I was feeling convicted about it, but I was still nervous about the numbers because I'm a numbers guy.
Yeah.
So on Wednesday when it got paid, we did it.
Yeah.
Which was, yeah.
And you told me that at the end of it, there was still plenty left over, right? It's not like you had a shortfall.
Yeah. So first, it was one of the most joyful experiences of my life.
Yeah.
Just being able to give, and we were crying and everything. And then at the end of the day, I started doing all of the actual bill pay.
Yeah.
And not only did we pay it, but we had enough left over.
Right.
So it was just this weird experience where I couldn't articulate it at first because I know we spent on things and Starbucks or whatever else. But I just didn't think that we would be able to do it.
Right.
So everything was paid.
So fast forward 12 hours or so into Thursday, and your day takes an interesting turn. Tell them briefly, give 2 minutes of what your Thursday looked like.
Yeah. So Wednesday we got paid. Then we paid all of our bills. And then Thursday, Kristen was actually sick that night. And then Thursday, I ended up staying working remotely because as a software engineer, you can work remote like 2 to 3 days, depending. And then I knew something was off, but I didn't know exactly what it was. And then by, I think it was 3 or 4 p.m., I got laid off. So, and they did it, it wasn't in person. They didn't wait till like Friday right. normally is when I always come in. They just did it in a Zoom call.
Right.
And it was just kind of, I was asking lots of questions and I handled it really well, but it was kind of a shocker because we had just taken that step forward. And all of those things in my mind that are the reason I don't give were starting to were starting to come up.
Yeah.
Instantly. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm gonna pause right here because as a pastor, I teach obedience, I teach, following God's word and believing the promises of God. So when I hear a story like this, I start going, really, Lord? Really? You got to help me out, brother. I'm trying to get the message out. And really? And I actually called Johnny and I go, hey, bro, I don't think the church is going to want you back because here's what happened. And Johnny, by the way, has been checking in frequently and asking about Franklin. So, it's not as if this all fixed itself in a matter of 24 hours, 48 hours, 72 hours. Tell everybody how long this journey has gone and sort of just, again, give 2 minutes of what you started to do immediately when it happened, kind of how long that happened, and start there.
Yeah, so I'm a fixer and a doer. But so the first thing I did was apply for jobs that night. Like I was already on it. I was very proactive. I was trying to remain calm. I had to tell Kristen, of course, which that was the first step. So I had to get over that. But it took 40 business days. So it was all through the rest of Thanksgiving. So my daughter's birthday was the next day. And then Thanksgiving was the next week. And then throughout Christmas, and even into January, I was unemployed.
So you can imagine you guys can imagine the emotional toil that takes on someone and the spiritual toil that takes on someone when they act in obedience and then go 40 business days. But you started posting on LinkedIn. And for those maybe who don't know, in the professional world, LinkedIn is sort of the Facebook of professionals, and not quite as social. It's more connections. But you started posting in there, and you had posted for several days, and there was some responsiveness, right? People were starting to watch your journey a little bit.
Yeah, so I posted every business day. I would kind of write a synopsis of unemployed day number and then what I had done for the day. Like in technology, there's 256 programming languages, so there's just a mass amount of stuff you can learn. So every day I was posting that, and I'd get like, I don't know, 300 to 4,000 views on each post, so nothing really dramatic or anything. And I did that for 20-something days.
Right.
Before kind of seeing any result from it. But it didn't look like there was any benefit from it. But people had started following
right.
and messaging me and kind of sending me some things, but it was very small interactions
yeah.
about halfway through.
And then you sort of changed what you posted, and you decided to kind of get your faith out in the middle of that post, right?
Yeah, so I mean, for me, I was always looking at the next date of bills, and that was my mindset of when I needed a job 2 weeks before that to pay the bills for it. So when it was about December, like right before Christmas Eve, I mean, I was looking at it like we're going to be homeless in January.
Yeah.
Because we didn't have any, you know, financial help, or all of our savings had been drained. We had just gone on vacation the first time in 8 years, really. So we were in this situation where it was like, okay, at this point, there's nothing really I can do.
Right.
And then it was Christmas Eve that I changed the post. And it was because the Lord had done a miracle for us of provision that I never thought that I'd experience.
Right.
And I had posted professing, obviously, Jesus as the provider for us.
Yeah.
And also, you know, the fact that doing all that we had done, all I could do was not enough.
Right.
God still stepped in and provided for us.
Yeah.
And that post went viral and trending. And like,
how many people did you say ended up?
I think it was like 180,000.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And you told me that miraculous provision was a couple you had never seen before showed up on your doorstep, right?
Yeah. So I've heard stories for the last 8 years as a Christian about provision, financial provision in a miraculous way. And God has always gotten us through some of the rough times, but I've never really seen a miracle in that way.
Yeah.
You know, waking up in my jammies Christmas Eve and kind of, you know, who's at my door?
Because
We don't really get that many people ever coming to our door.
Right.
So, and opening the door, and it was a married couple and their two daughters, who I still don't know who they are. I thought they were from our church originally. And
yeah.
I'm analytical, so I was trying to find out who it was.
Yeah, yeah.
But they just started handing us bags of food. And then they gave us a card, and the wife just said, "We want you to know you're loved." I brought it all in. Kristen came downstairs and started looking at stuff, and it was just incredible. Like even small little things, like the stuff Kristen had wanted to buy for Christmas Eve morning.
Very specific brand
very
of
specific
food, right?
Brand yeah. of like Annie's cinnamon rolls.
Yeah.
And it was that brand. I mean, it was just, and we had needed groceries right at that point. So that was the miracle for
yeah.
me. Until the Lord, you know, provided for our rent.
Yeah.
And
you opened the card and there was
the card and there was no name or anything. It was just a very surreal experience, being on the other side of provision.
Yeah. Yeah. So. Okay. So that blows up. People start following you. And not only that, you start getting massive interaction with people, job offers. People are wanting to be a part of your story. People are behind you. People are really starting to follow you, right?
Yeah. So, I mean, when you do something for 20 days on LinkedIn and you don't get much traction, you don't really think anything is going to change.
Yeah.
So for God to first provide and then provide for January's rent,
right.
And that was already, you know, a miracle for me.
Yeah.
But then once I posted that in faith, I didn't really know what was going to happen because it's a professional world. So
yeah.
you can imagine there's going to be trolls and people commenting on it that are just, you know, dissing Jesus or whatever. But then I had the provision of that post.
Yeah.
And I ended up getting like 300 messages, comments, a ton of different people just kind of also stepping out in faith and saying things.
Yeah.
And then I was getting messages. I'd wake up every morning to 45 new LinkedIn messages.
Yeah.
And Kristen can attest to this, being I'm not, you know, making it dramatic. It was a flood
yeah.
of opportunity and people sending messages saying, "Hey, here's this job lead." It was overwhelming, but I just took it one message and email and call
yeah,
the time.
Yeah, and so I'm gonna fast forward the story a little bit and say that you went through several interviews, all of which you sort of were putting your hopes on, like, okay, if I land this job right now, I'll be able to pay bills, blah, blah, blah. And those, not all those materialized. And now in retrospect, probably thankful they didn't. So I'm going to push the fast forward button, fill everybody in on what's happening now.
Yeah, so there were definitely jobs that I was crying out to the Lord for and just asking him to please just give me this job.
Yeah.
Ones that even I went in and it looked like it was going to work. It was going to happen. And then, you know, no callback.
Right.
And then having to chase people down to find out the answer was no, or they hired internally. But after 40 business days, I got an opportunity. I got a new job. And it was actually worked out to be the 40th business day.
Yeah.
And that was... It's, yeah, this is my first week. I completed last week.
And so, yeah. So give everybody a really quick contrast between your prior job and this job. This one better, this one pay more. Tell me, to give a contrast between the two.
Yeah, it's funny because, you know, nothing against that company, but I was miserable mm-hmm. at that company, but I was pursuing money, right? And I was pursuing provision for my family. And the contrast between that job and this job, usually there's like a honeymoon phase. You start to get excited about a new job and everything looks right.
Right.
But I mean, every little detail, everything about it was beyond what I could have imagined.
Yeah.
And I still think, I mean, I dealt with Facebook, big companies, little companies, companies all over the U.S.
Yeah.
There was no company like this. And the working remote...
because you thought you were going to have to move.
I figured, you know, we got one opportunity in New Jersey that they said yes. There was just a bunch of different weird positions in different states. But yeah, it was just the fact that we didn't have to leave our home.
Yeah.
We didn't have to leave our city, our church.
Yeah.
It was just every little detail still is unraveling as I'm going through.
And
it.
You love the culture?
It's the best culture of any company I've ever even witnessed. Or
and yeah, you can and you can... work a limited amount of hours, or if you want, you can code and do extras and earn badges and increase income. And it's a way that you're able to even earn more provision, right, for your family. Than
oh,
you
I mean, ever. Yeah, the all of that stuff's great, like the culture and everything. But I mean, at the same time, it was just a flood when they told me the opportunities that were available.
Yeah.
I couldn't really believe and like grasp the concept of making that kind of money.
Right.
And I couldn't really see... you know, any opportunity working out to be better than what I had already had,
yeah.
especially just in Sacramento in general.
Yeah.
But absolutely, it was like, not only was all this God providing each thing, but the job itself, the opportunity and the growth and the ability to impact the business world through
right.
coding
right.
was just, yeah, impeccable. It's just unreal. Like where he positioned me, yeah.
Can you guys give God a huge hand? And I'm so grateful for Franklin and Kristen, they've continued to serve. Even the week he found out that he had lost his job, he shows up on Sunday, sits through all of worship rehearsal. He works back in the tech booth there. And you know how it is when your mind's somewhere else, and he came and was part of our church and served our church and has continued. And one thing that he didn't mention was the Sunday that he had, following his layoff, he had gotten his final check from the company and he tithed on that, which I think is incredible, because that might be a point in which most of us go, okay, Lord, if you're going to play this way, I'm keeping it all. And I tried to be obedient, but that clearly didn't pay off. And I love the obedience that they had committed to something and followed through with it even after being laid off. And can I tell you that I absolutely believe God used him in those 40 business days. And there's something biblical about the number 40, by the way. And there's peoples whose faith have been ignited, challenged, strengthened. Maybe people are exploring faith for the first time because of this. And God delivered a job far better than the one he had. And not only that, God has increased faith in that household like never before, because every single financial need of theirs was met during that whole 40 days. Can we give God another thank you? Thank you, Carvin. Or Carvin, you're mixed in Franklin and Carvin. See you, buddy. Thank you. All right, so I'm going to speak for just a few minutes because I want to bring a biblical perspective to this, and you're even going to see Gavin come up at point three and just keep us moving. And so pull out your notes if you don't already have them out. And I'm going to begin with reading a passage from Mark 9, 17 through 24. So you can follow along on your notes. It's going to be in the screens to the left and right of me. One of the men of the crowd spoke up and said, "Teacher," he's speaking to Jesus, "Teacher, I brought my son so you could heal him. He's possessed by an evil spirit that won't let him talk. He's mute. And whenever the spirit seizes him, it throws him violently to the ground. Then he foams at the mouth and he grinds his teeth and he becomes rigid. So I asked your disciples to cast out the evil spirit, but they couldn't do it." Jesus said to them, "You faithless people," most translations indicate he was speaking actually to his own disciples, "how long must I be with you?" Another one, how long before you learn from me? "How long must I put up with you? Bring the boy to me." So they brought the boy. But when the evil spirit saw Jesus, it threw the child into violent convulsions and he fell to the ground, writhing and foaming at the mouth. "How long has this been happening?" Jesus asked the boy's father. He replied, "Since he was a little boy. And the spirit often throws him into the fire or into water trying to kill him. Have mercy on us and help us if you can." "What do you mean, if I can?" Jesus asked. "Anything is possible if a person believes." And the father instantly cried out, "I do believe, but help me overcome my unbelief." Every one of us needs to hear this message today because there's an area of your life in which you need help overcoming your unbelief, in which you believe in other areas of your life and you believe for certain things and you are living in obedience and you're living in faith in those areas. And then there is one or two areas, and maybe it happens to be a crisis area, a circumstance area in your life in which your faith has stalled out. So pull out your notes because we're going to very quickly do four things that are going to help increase that faith. To overcome my unbelief and let God be God in my life. Because if you follow this story all the way to the end, and we're not going to get to do that today, the boy is delivered of that demonic oppression. He's healed. Jesus, to overcome my unbelief and let God in my life, I have to, number one, stop asking him for the impossible while only believing for the possible. Stop asking him for the impossible while only believing for what's possible. So sometimes we read a story in the Bible and we're like, I don't identify with that person at all. Like, we see some story of great faith and great obedience, and we just go, I don't identify. I don't think I would be that person. I don't think I would follow in obedience. I don't think I would have acted out like that. I don't think I would have said that thing in response to Jesus. I don't think I would have. That person clearly has way more faith, way better follower of Christ than I am. I don't identify with that person at all. And so that's sometimes why we disconnect with people in the Bible. Then there are a few people in the Bible we go, that feels exactly how I would have responded. That feels exact. And here is a man who's desperate enough with his son to go to Jesus because his son is in crisis. The family is in crisis. Listen to what it says. Have mercy on us and help us if you can. Jesus says, "What do you mean if I can? Anything is possible for a person that believes." And the father says, "I do believe, but help me overcome my unbelief." So here's what happens. The father has enough faith to bring him to Jesus, but not enough faith to believe Jesus can actually do what he's asked Jesus to do. If he did have enough faith, he wouldn't have qualified it, would he? With "if you can." How many times have you gone to God and asked him for a miracle in your life that you were doubtful that he was going to deliver? Probably several. I know I have. Because I feel overwhelmed, I feel overcome with frustration, grief, anxiety, stress, and I project that onto God. Because I'm like Franklin, if I can find a solution, I go to work right away. So what I do is I go, God, if you can do anything about this, I'd sure appreciate that. And then I go to work and try to do it myself. I kind of get him working in the background. If there's any kind of heavenly stuff you got going on, it'd be sure great if you just made that all happen. But I'm gonna start working on it. A lot of qualifications, a lot of ifs in there. I don't know about you, but I think that we've probably been guilty of setting Jesus up for failure in our lives. Listen to what Jesus says himself in Mark 11:23. He says, "Listen to the truth I speak to you. If someone says this to the mountain with great faith and having no doubt, mountain be lifted up and thrown into the midst of the sea, and believes that what he says will happen, it will be done." I don't know that any of us would speak to a mountain with faith and not have it contaminated by doubt. Go up to the Sierras. Drive up this week. Say to any, pick the smallest one and speak to it and tell me that your faith is not contaminated by doubt. Jesus says the limitations of what he can do in our lives is not limited by his inability, whether he can or can't. He says it's limited by our ability to believe. That man had gone to doctor after doctor, probably had seen holistic medicine people, probably tried essential oils, probably tried everything he possibly could try to no avail. And so when he says to Jesus, "If you can help him, it sure would be great." And Jesus goes, "If I can? What kind of faith is that? Anything is possible if you believe. Not if you just believe in the power of the universe or the power of yourself or the power of positive thinking. It's if you believe genuinely that I can do it, I can do it." Secondly is this: to overcome my unbelief and let God be God in my life, I have to, number two, trust his promises without needing to see the preview. Listen, there are some really good movies. Lisa and I go out every single Monday for dinner and a movie. It's our date night. So we have seen virtually every movie ever made in the last like 5 years, 6 years, because we go every Monday. Our friends, when they hook up with us, they always say, "Hey, you guys want to go see a movie?" And we go, "Yeah, we love seeing movies." And then they go, "Do you want to go see this?" And we go, "Seen it." And they, "You want to see this?" "Seen it." "You want to see this?" "Seen it." And then our friends go, "We don't want to be friends with you anymore because you never have a movie to go to with us." You know what I've never wanted, though, is to get into the movie and let that tension build and the suspense build and the drama build. I have never wanted for the director to interrupt the movie and go, oh, I know you're feeling, you know, right, the anxiety, the murderer's in the house somewhere. Never have I wanted the director to go, "Listen, everyone's okay. All right, this person doesn't get killed. I know it's all freaky and suspenseful right now. It all works out. Okay, just want to tell you that." And then backs away off the camera. I've never wanted a good book to be interrupted by the last chapter. Here's one to tell you how it all wraps up, because I know you're wondering. Yet you and I, when we ask God for something, we want the assurance, we want the preview of how it all works out. "Lord, I'll have faith in you if you just tell me how it all pans out. And then you'll have earned my faith. I believe your promises as long as you tell me how this promise is fulfilled in my life." Listen to what Hebrews 11:1 says. "Now faith brings our hopes into reality." Faith brings our hopes into reality and becomes the foundation needed to acquire the things we long for. It is all the evidence required to prove what is still unseen. Faith is our preview into the future. Faith says, "I believe God is going to do what's good for me." Faith puts the promises of God into our lives and believes that every single one of them is as real as anything we can see right in front of us. You see, we are always driven by the circumstances that we can touch, feel, smell, hear, that it's been emailed to us, that a boss tells to us, that a doctor relays to us. Those are the things that we tend to believe in. But faith is what brings the promises of God into reality. Third is this: to overcome my unbelief and let God be God in my life, I have to, number three, receive his provision without wanting the padding. Now, I don't want to give the impression that we aren't capable of great faith. We are capable of believing in things that haven't happened yet. We just tend to sort of believe in all the wrong things. We have a capacity to worry and stress and feel constant anxiety over things, and we have a limitless faith for what can go wrong. They say, and I think this statistic is somewhere right, you can follow up on this, but they say about 85 to 90-something percent of that which we spend time worrying about never actually occurs in our life. So we spend an awful lot of time having faith in the worst-case scenario that never materializes, and we don't channel any of our faith towards the things that can actually materialize in our life. You see, when we have faith, we deposit into something. And from that, God can either do something with it or not do anything with it at all. And when we make deposits into faithlessness and doubt, God can't work with any of that. But when we deposit our faith into the promises of God, God can do something with that. Here's the problem, and Franklin said this, and I think this is probably something most of us are guilty of, that we believe in the God of money. Now, none of us would say that we idolize money. None of us say that money is an idol in our life, but it's simply not true. Here's why. Because we believe that money can solve problems that God is either uninterested in solving, or that God is too slow in solving, or that God's not going to solve correctly. So here's how it works. It goes like this. Problem in my job, money can fix that. If I have enough of it, I can walk away from that job and get another job. Problem in my marriage, we usually fight about money, so if we had more money, we would certainly have a happier marriage. Problem with the kids, if it's a bad school, I can get them into a private school. If it's tutoring I need to pay for, I can get money will solve that problem as well. If it's faith, I can just have more money. If God would give me more money, it would certainly be easier to believe in him. If it's emotional and spiritual health, we say, listen, God, I would stress a lot less if I had money all taken care of. You see, we just feel like if we could have it all, if we could solve our problems with a little bit of money, you know what? God, I'm not even greedy. I don't need the mega lottery. I don't need the $600 million. Just a good $10 million would solve my problems. Statistically, we know this, that 8 out of 10 people who win the lottery spend it all in the first 5 years and have nothing left, many of which end up in bankruptcy. If money were actually the solution to any of our problems, all of those people would have fairy tale endings. Money solved my problems. They'd have reality shows. Notice there's no big follow-up shows on lottery winners. There was one for a little while, and it was almost proof of what I'm talking about. The host would say, "You're rich. You won the lottery. You should be able to spend whatever you want." And these people were doing just exactly that. They were going to spend all their lottery winnings on a home they absolutely did not need. Keep your lives free from the love of money and be satisfied with what you have. God has said, "I will never leave you. I will never abandon you." If you and I believe that God will never abandon us and God will never leave us, then we believe that all of our needs are met according to his riches, not ours. And so we just go, "Wow, this is kind of a big problem, Lord. I was getting money through my job, but I don't have that anymore. I'll be waiting on you to let me know where that provision is going to come from." Fourth and finally is this: to overcome my unbelief and let God be God in my life, I have to give him thanks for the process before there's ever a payoff. So I've shared with you guys that Lisa and I went, before we actually came on staff here at what was then Heritage and now Summit, that we had gone about a year without working. And I applied and applied and applied, and I couldn't land a job. And I was so angry at God, and my faith was so wounded, and I had never been in a place like this emotionally before. I now can empathize with those who struggle with depression. It was the first time that I felt that oppressive weight of depression in my life. My faith was so wounded that whenever I talked to God, it was with such anger and hostility that it is still a surprise to me today God didn't strike me down. And here's what was amazing. We had sold our home in Arizona for a windfall profit. And we're able to put that money, didn't have to pay capital gains on it, put that money into an account, move back here, and I could have for over a year not worked. I did for almost a year not work, but I could have used that money to pay myself, to provide for the needs of my family, spend time with them like I never had before, because I was coming out of a season where I was working 70-hour work weeks, where our marriage was strained, where my parenting was strained, where my emotional health and spiritual health were strained, because I was just in a very toxic place. I could have used all of that time. I could have just said, my God, thank you, Lord. Thank you for giving me the provision up front. God gave me the provision up front, and I still was not grateful. Still did not celebrate the season I was in. I still did not just say, oh my God, you're so good. You're so good to me, Lord, that you gave me all of this money up front so that I can take as long as I want to find another position. But right now I can just spend it loving on my family and celebrating, God, this life that you've given me. Instead, I was mean-spirited to God. I was broken in my faith. I was damaged as a husband, damaged as a father. You see, I wanted the provision all up front, and I wanted to be able to keep all that and then start making more money again. God could not win with me, and that's what happens when our mindset is expecting the payoff ahead of time. Rarely do we ever stop and say, Lord, in the midst of this, I thank you for what's happening in my character. I thank you for what's happening in my marriage and my friendships and my relationships and my parenting. I thank you for what's happening in my faith and my priorities, for my attitude and my values. Thank you for developing me during this time. Thank you for providing miraculously for me. Thank you for doing what only you could do only in a season like this. We want to be able to live in comfort and let God just sort of pick at all the little things in our life. I want you to hear this as we end. God is not going to deliver you from difficulty. That's just not how it works. That's not how any of this works. Listen to this in Isaiah 43:2. When you pass through the deep, stormy sea, you can count on me to be there with you. When you pass through the raging rivers, you will not drown. When you walk through persecution like fiery flames, you will not be burned. The flames will not harm you. Listen to the way God says, you're going to go through some really rough stuff. You're going to feel like you're drowning. You're going to feel like the waves are overcoming you. And as soon as you get out of the water and go, oh, thank God, a warm fire, those fires are going to start raging against you, and you're going to be surrounded by fire, and you're going to be like, holy cow, I just left the water, and now I'm being surrounded by flames. But God says, listen, I'm not delivering you from those things, because those things are going to change you, because you're going to learn to trust me in a way that you never have before. You're going to learn to look to me. You're going to look above circumstances, and you're going to look up, and you're going to see me there, and you're going to see that I'll never allow you to go through any of this alone. And when I'm with you, you have nothing to fear. Because let me ask you this, are any of our firemen in service today? I know Scott snuck in for Riley's baptism. Any of our firemen here? So listen, we've got some firemen that work in our church. And if I was in the middle of any of these catastrophic fires that happened in California, you know who I'd want to be standing next to? One of those guys. Because they know what they're doing. They know how to not only get through the fire, but deliver you to safety. They know how to combat the fire. They know how to fight back against the fire. That's who I want to be with. If I was in the ocean and the waves were overcoming, you know who I'd want to see? I'd want to see a big Coast Guard ship right there with a rescuer repelling his way down and getting into that water with me. And if I can put my trust in men like that or women like that, then I can put my trust in a God who can deliver me from any of those things. Because when it's talking about fire, it's actually talking about accusations and your reputation being ruined. Because most of the time you and I aren't in a pool drowning or in the ocean drowning. We're not in a raging river. We're not in a fire. Most of us aren't in circumstances like that in which we need to lean on God. We're in financial crisis, marriage crisis, emotional health crisis. Our reputation is being attacked. Our business is being attacked. Things happen in our lives in which we just look around and we go, I need you, God, because I feel overwhelmed by the enemy. God says, I need you to stop and just thank me for what's going to come of this. I loved the faith of Franklin and Kristen that said, I got laid off this week for I trusted God on Wednesday and we tithed. And I got fired on Thursday. And then I tithed again on Sunday. That's the kind of faith that God rewards. And He'll reward yours too. Would you bow your heads and close your eyes? Father, I thank you for every person in this room. And I thank you for the fire and the water that creeps in on our lives, that tests our faith. God, I never want to go through an 11 months like we had to go through leading up to coming on staff here. But I look back and it transformed my love for my family, my love for my wife, my love for you, and my trust in your provision. Our relationship, God, is stronger and better than it's ever been. I don't know if I had strengthened my faith earlier, if I had thanked you earlier, if I had surrendered earlier, maybe that season wouldn't have lasted nearly as long. I fought you so hard. Thank you for stories like Franklin's, in which God, He just continued to trust, even when trust didn't seem like the wisest thing to do. And provision after provision came to reward their faith. Maybe his season would have lasted a year if he had fought like I did. So I pray, God, not a single person in this room takes the posture I took back then, but rather takes that posture of thank you, God, for whatever crazy, miraculous, wonderful thing that's being done in the midst of these circumstances, which are intimidating and fear-causing and anxiety-stirring. But I don't do any of that, God. I deposit into my account of faith so you have something to work with. That's my cry today for every single one of us. In Jesus' name, amen. Amen. Bless you guys.